From the heart of London, this is Resonance 104.4 FM.
Kevin Trenberth spent 42 years as a scientist in the United States leading climate analysis for NCAR, which is the National Center for Atmospheric Research. But Kevin, when I read your new book and when I listen to you in our talks, you speak more about the role of the ocean than the atmosphere. Why is that?
Yeah, so I started out as a meteorologist. My first job after I graduated in New Zealand was in the New Zealand Meteorological Service, as it was called at the time. And I actually did a bit of weather forecasting. But, you know, watching the weather go by, I sort of discerned that there were some patterns. And I wrote my first paper about the El Nino phenomenon while I was in New Zealand a long time ago, back in 1976, I have to say. And so that was a clue that there were some patterns of weather that were related to the interactions between the atmosphere and the ocean. And all of the developments that have occurred since then have reinforced that view that there is a lot of natural variability that goes on. A lot of it is related to the changes in the ocean and the changes in the sea surface temperatures, and how they affect the local storms. The tropics turn out to be especially important because of the nature of the weather events that occur in the tropics related to things like monsoons. You can see that in Pakistan with all the flooding that has occurred. You know, this is a wet area, and, you know, wet areas tend to get wetter with regard to climate change. And so understanding whether there's going to be a strong monsoon or where the storm track is going to be across the United States and which areas are more vulnerable for flooding and which are not, and this can affect things like water resources and hydroelectric power, for instance, in the Pacific Northwest. All of those things relate to the interactions between the atmosphere and the ocean. I mentioned that I was very much involved in the early stages of trying to find out what was going on with El Nino a lot more. And then, of course, climate change has reared its head. And so understanding a lot more about what's going on in the ocean and also why has become an important part of my own research. And in recent years, I've collaborated with colleagues to better understand the ocean heat content and the associated changes in sea level. And we've had, I think, some quite exciting work that we have, or research that we have uncovered as a result of this.
As we've talked about, in summer of 2022, there were stunning events. Pakistan was roasting with heat, and then about a third of the country went underwater with floods. In China, extreme heat stayed for weeks. And more painful heat in Europe and the U.S., of course. Should we say that oceans change so slowly that all these land events are not accompanied by anything really shocking in the sea?
Oh, but yes. I mean, this is one of the things about, if you look at, for instance, this last 3 years, the La Nina event. During La Nina, there is cool water in the central and eastern tropical Pacific, and warm water tends to build up in the tropical western Pacific. But the changes in the weather patterns over the North Pacific and the South Pacific, the changes in the storm tracks, alter the sea temperatures in those regions. And so now in the North Pacific, there is a very intense, large-scale, so-called marine heat wave that is going on. And also in the New Zealand region where I am, in the Tasman Sea, there is also a marine heat wave going on that has developed as a consequence of this La Nina. And now the fact that the warm water exists in these regions means that in New Zealand, where we've had the latter stages of winter in August, we've had a number of flooding events because there's more moisture in the atmosphere as a consequence of these high sea surface temperatures. And so the first La Nina was not like this because there wasn't the marine heat wave here. But now there is, and we've had major flooding in our area. Earlier in the year, there was major flooding over the East Coast, and Sydney has been drowned on, what, three occasions so far this year. So the eastern part of Australia is a lot wetter in La Nina conditions. But this La Nina is certainly going to be manifested a little differently in middle latitudes than the previous ones because of these marine heat waves that are occurring. And in the North Pacific, there have been cases in the past where there have been major marine heat waves. One of them was, about 2014, 2015, called the Blob. And it had major impacts on all of the marine life. It had adverse effects that were documented right from the tiniest organisms, the plankton, the phytoplankton and the zooplankton that formed the food for fish. And so it affected the fish. And there were an estimate that 100 million cod died as a consequence of this blob that occurred, this warm blob that occurred in the North Pacific around about that time. And, of course, as soon as the fish and other organisms are affected, and there were other species as well that were affected, then that affects some of the other marine life. It affects the coastal otters. It affects all of the birds, seabirds and gulls. And there were millions of birds that died as a consequence of this. And there's been some fairly good documentation of this. And then in the ocean, there were whales, hundreds of whales that were adversely affected by the whole food web that exists within the ocean. And so we don't hear a lot about this, but it does indeed have major consequences. And, of course, it affects fisheries, has profound effects in places that are dependent upon fisheries, such as Peru and Ecuador off the west coast of South America. So we certainly need to pay more attention to what is happening in the oceans.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. Many of us fear that the world will just keep getting hotter and hotter as the centuries progress, but maybe not, because you co-authored a paper released in July 2022. The title is The Ocean Response to Climate Change Guides Both Adaptation and Mitigation Efforts. You, John Abram, Michael Mann, and other eminent scientists suggest Earth will stabilize when we stop adding greenhouse gases to the atmosphere. The planet will stop warming. I'm very doubtful about that. Could you please tell us how the stabilization could work?
Well, this relates to the concept of net zero, which a number of countries have signed up to, but it's a target, it's a goal somewhere around 2050, or in the case of China, around 2060, that we would get to a place that we might call net zero, which means the additions of carbon dioxide that we're producing at that time by burning any fossil fuels that remain are offset in some way by maybe growing trees or in some other way. And so the net amount of carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere is zero at that time. So there's no more increases in carbon dioxide. I mean, the moment carbon dioxide is increasing at as large a rate as it ever has, and I have to say that occurred even during the pandemic, although there were clearly fewer fossil fuels consumed by commuting and cars and so on. Unfortunately, there was more carbon dioxide that went into the atmosphere from forest fires, and think of all of the wildfires in California, for instance, as an example. So at the moment, carbon dioxide continues to increase in the atmosphere. As it levels off, the heating of the climate system will slow down and even maybe stop to some extent. But the conditions will be quite a bit warmer, and so there's apt to be more water vapor in the atmosphere. That continues to have a little bit of a warming effect. And the oceans are very slow to respond. They take at least 20 years to really respond. And so they certainly keep warming. sea level will keep rising for probably centuries, even after we stabilize the atmospheric concentrations of carbon dioxide. And so your gut feeling is correct that it's not over by any means, but it is the first part of the stabilization of the system. And there's two aspects of a new climate. One is the heating and the changes that are occurring to get you to a new climate. And then the second part is the new climate itself. And so climate change, I hesitate to put a word on it like bad, but, you know, climate change is bad because it's disruptive. It's causing a change. It's causing a change from one climate to another climate. Now, maybe we could get used to a new climate, but as long as it keeps changing, as soon as we start to adapt to the new climate and, you know, maybe change our farming practices or changing what the farmers are growing and so on, it changes again. And so the change aspect is one of the things which is disruptive. And that's the thing that we need to get a hold of more than anything. We need to slow down the rates of climate change. And then as the climate begins to change slowly, we can begin to adapt to it more readily. We can change everything that we're doing, from farming and managing water and forestry and so on, and food supplies and fisheries and everything. We can begin to adapt to this new climate. And so stabilizing the atmosphere becomes very important in that regard. But then the climate will be different than it has been. And so there will indeed have to be an adaptation, as we call it, to it. And to the extent that we can, we should try to assess where the biggest vulnerabilities are and try to build more resilience to this. And a key part of this is certainly managing water. The times when you've got a drought and you don't have enough water, but then there are other times, as in Pakistan at the moment, and, you know, recently in Kentucky, and also in a part of Texas, there's been some flooding. And how do you save that water for the times when you're not going to have enough? And so water management, I think, is one of the key challenges for society as a whole, and that applies in every country around the world.
That's a beautiful way to wrap it up. Is there anything else that you would like to tell our listeners?
Well, it affects us all now, and the reporting of climate change has gotten to a point where it is recognized that climate change is playing a role. But it's not changing these weather systems that much at the moment. The consequences of the weather systems in terms of rain and heat waves and temperatures and so on is certainly much greater, but the weather systems continue. El Nino continues. And so it has all of these consequences that we have to deal with. Education, therefore, becomes a key component. The reporting is certainly a lot better than it was 20 years ago. But we still have so much to do in order to really get this problem under control. And the biggest issue is for the future generations, our children and our grandchildren and, you know, the next generations. You know, unfortunately, some people don't care much what kind of a planet they leave their children, but they should.
Is it fair to say, though, that we've seen now, especially this year, some climate change, but we've just seen the very beginnings? We've just been introduced. We haven't really met.
Well, I think we've seen some pretty good examples this year, and it surprised a number of climate scientists as to how extreme it has been. It surprised me a little bit, although not as much as some others. You know, I think the odds are that we will have some more years that will be closer to what we used to think of as normal, and we will go back and then we'll say, oh, it was just weather and it's gone away and we don't have to worry about it. But we do have to worry about it, because what we've been seeing over this past year is the sort of thing that we will see a lot more in the future, and maybe even a little worse, if you can possibly imagine that. And so when we start to go back to things that look a bit closer to normal, it's not over. That's the other part of the message.
From Auckland, New Zealand, we've been speaking with Dr. Kevin Trenberth. He's a distinguished scholar for the National Center for Atmospheric Research and a leader in reports by the IPCC. Kevin publishes heavily cited papers fundamental to climate science. His new book is The Changing Flow of Energy Through the Climate System. As I've said, that book lived on my bedside table all summer, and it's been my teaching guide. You can get links to find out more in my weekly show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Kevin Trenberth, thank you for helping our listeners.
You're most welcome.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org, free for all, ecoshock.org.